Call the meeting to order. If you are here, please log in on the computer. We have 27 board members present. That is a quorum. Let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, let's start with the chair's report. Any supervisor conference reports? Anybody have anything? Jill Billings.
Thank you. A week and a half ago, Wednesday, some members from the Health and Human Services Board attended the Health Day in the Capitol, and I have some position papers, if supervisors would like to see them, issues that we advocated on, including tax credit for workplaces that start a wellness program or have a wellness program for a limited time, the credits for a limited time, and other items. We also last Wednesday attended the County Ambassador Program along with WICSA, did a joint day in the Capitol, and we advocated on several issues. So I have the position papers if anyone's interested. Come and see me.
All right, thank you. Arlene Benrood.
Thank you. Last week I attended a conference in Washington, D.C. Every one of the legislators and our speaker said there's no money available. That's the first time I've ever heard that, and I've been there many times. Usually we'll try and work with you or we'll this, and they just said no. I spent more time in the airport, 9 hours because the plane was down in Florida where they had tornadoes, and on the train going down, it was 5 hours late, so I had to stay in a hotel and missed my first day there. But no cost to La Crosse County. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Benrood, for that cheerful news. Maybe better luck next time. Audrey Cotter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I went to the Seven Rivers annual meeting last Friday in Winona, and it was refreshing to see the quality of people that are working together, the high-level execs from major companies in the region, and working towards collaboration and cooperation. So I was very pleased to go and represent the county.
Thank you. Ms. Cotter. Don Vina, did I see your hand up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Marilyn Budretti and myself went to a university extension about a two-day meeting we had in Madison. We listened to some of the people talking about the future. There's going to be probably a 10% cut in all departments and how they're going to survive. We had any number of speakers talking about the programs within the counties and then planning for the future. And then the second day in the afternoon, we had two scheduled meetings with Senator Kopanky and Jennifer Schilling. So we didn't get any backlash from either one of them, so that was a plus.
Thank you, Mr. Bina. Anybody else have any reports? Seeing none, let's go on to the administrator's report. Mr. O'Malley.
Okay, first I have two proclamations. April 2011, La Crosse County Government Month. Whereas La Crosse County employs nearly 1,400 people working with an annual budget of $135 million, yet at the same time, La Crosse County maintains the fifth lowest tax levy out of the 72 counties per capita. And whereas La Crosse County employees and the County Board of Supervisors are committed to excellence, integrity, pride, and respect, encouraging creativity as a source of new ideas to continuously improve services. Whereas counties enhance the quality of life in countless ways, including protecting health and public safety, enforcing laws and ordinances, operating the court system, maintaining vital public records, conducting elections, maintaining and plowing the roads, preventing abuse and neglect of the most vulnerable, assisting the elderly, poor, and mentally ill, disposing of solid waste, enhancing environmental protection, planning for economic development, and being prepared for community responses to emergencies and disasters. Whereas National County Government Month is celebrated each April by the nation's counties to raise public awareness and understanding about the roles and responsibilities of county government, the 2011 theme is Serving Our Veterans, Our Armed Forces and their families. Now, therefore, be it resolved, La Crosse County Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim the month of April La Crosse County Government Month.
Moved by Mr. Menninger and seconded by Bill Brockmiller. Mr. Menninger has a comment.
Well, just a question. I'm trying to connect the dots on this. You go through four WASs, and it's all wonderful, and then all of a sudden you start talking about veterans. How does that connect?
That's actually one of the services, obviously, we provide and do a lot of work on for veterans and their families. But this was a theme set by the National Association of Counties for this year in particular for County Government Month.
Okay. It wasn't clear to me whose theme that was, but that's the National Counties Association.
NACO, and we usually reference it in the resolution if NACO does something specific for that particular proclamation.
All right. Any further discussion or questions? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Next proclamation is National Volunteer Week 2011. The Seasons for Caring, April 17th through 23rd, 2011. This came out of Aging and Long-Term Care Committee today, which represents, obviously, the two nursing homes and our aging unit that rely a great deal on volunteers and ties into a national effort. Whereas April is Volunteer Recognition Month, and whereas many of our residents spend hours volunteering their time and energy to improve La Crosse County services and programs, whereas it is important to acknowledge the effort volunteers have put forth to strengthen our county communities and services, and whereas volunteers can make a difference in countless ways, and whereas La Crosse County has provided opportunities for people to become actively engaged in enhancing their communities, and whereas residents of La Crosse County have consistently been involved as volunteers throughout Hillview and Lakeview Healthcare Centers, La Crosse County Aging Unit, and UW Extension. Now, therefore, we as members of the La Crosse County Board do hereby proclaim the week of April 17th through 23rd, 2011, as the Seasons for Caring Volunteer Recognition Week.
Moved by Monica Cruz, seconded by Margaret Wood. Discussion or questions? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
The next item on County Administrator's Report is actually an update on the Metropolitan Transit Utility, and we've invited Keith Carlson here to actually provide that report in your packet. Of course, you do have the annual report, and Mr. Chair, I would ask for permission to introduce Keith and have him address the board.
Any objection? Seeing none, Keith, come on up to the podium, please.
Thank you for having me tonight. Steve had asked me to tell you a little bit about the impact of the governor's budget on transit services in La Crosse, and then just give you a little update on what's been happening at MTU. I think I'll start with the governor's budget, and if I could ask you, actually it would help if you actually take out the annual report and turn to the back page. There's a couple graphs on the back there. The top pie chart shows as our revenue sources, and you'll see there that 26% of our funding comes from the state government, 38% is federal funding. Revenue, fare box revenues and other revenues is 29%, a local share. The city of La Crosse and Onalaska and Campbell is only 6% of our budget. The governor's budget talked about is proposing to cut 10% of our state funding. That would come out of the 26% there, which is a total of about $1.4 million. 10% of that's about $140,000 is the cut we'd be looking at for 2012. So that's significant. He's also, of course, restricting the city of La Crosse's ability to by cutting shared revenues and tying our hands on property taxes. But probably more significantly, he's moving funding for transit out of the segregated transportation fund and proposing to move it into the general fund, which would put us in competition with schools and all of the other needs the state has. So that probably has the most significant long-term impact on our funding. The budget repair bill that was passed actually impacts the federal dollars that's shown in that pie chart. The federal government requires all of our grant agreements contain a requirement for collective bargaining. And by removing collective bargaining from to our employees means the loss of our federal possible loss of our federal dollars, which you'd see is significant. That's about $2 million a year in operating aids, as well as 80% of all of our capital funding comes from the federal government. For example, we do, thankfully, we have $11 million on the Grand River Station that we have received already, so thankfully we have that. But the city of La Crosse wouldn't be able to replace buses or any of our other capital needs. So that is a serious issue. The city just extended labor contracts with our union through 2013, and most cities in the state have done the same for the next year or so. There are some that have not extended agreements, and that will impact us even though we have a labor agreement, because they do equalize. The state takes all the federal dollars and all the state dollars and equalizes that distribution across all of us. So if there are cities that don't have agreements and lose their federal dollars, that will impact us. So it is the transit, but these are significant. The transit utility is going to do what we can to address these cuts. It will most likely involve fare increases and service cuts. We will try to do it in a fashion that impacts the most transit dependent and needy in the community the least. So that's what I have on the budget discussion. If you know, I'm assuming, kind of assuming that you all know what we do. The annual report talks, there's a lot of information here, but we provide fixed route bus service in La Crosse, La Crescent, French Island, and part of Onalaska. We also provide what's called M2 Mobility Plus, which is specialized transportation. We contract for that service, and we work with, we have a joint agreement with Human Services, although I think that is getting smaller over the years here, and more with Western Wisconsin Cares. So those are really the two things that we do. On the front page, the big news, of course, last year was the grand opening of the Grand River Station. I want to tell you that how successful that has been. I think that we haven't had too much opportunity to get into the media with this, but it is primarily a housing project. There's 93 apartments there, and the last word that I have, they're about 80% rented. So the housing project is doing very well. The transit portion of the project is working much better than any of us would have anticipated. You hire architects, they design things, and you never really know until you actually use it. And I can tell you that it is working so well. It's so efficient for our buses, and our customers, riders are safe and comfortable down there, as opposed to being on the street. On the way over tonight, I was thinking there's probably some people in this room that were involved in this site study that was 10 years ago that we were looking at building that project on the old Ward site. Some of you were probably here then. That's the length of time it took to get that project completed, but working very well. We do have Jefferson Lines moved in down there in December, so Jefferson Lines is here twice a day. You can go towards Madison, Milwaukee once a day, or you can go head to Minneapolis once a day. So that's been a good partnership, both for riders that use MTU to get to the inner city bus, but also they provide staffing and a funding source for us to use the facility. A couple other things I'll just mention to you. ARRA funding, that we receive $1.1 million in ARRA funding, Recovery Act money. We have put that to real good use. We put a hybrid bus into service a month or so ago. We are renovating our bus garage, new heating and ventilation, structural repairs, as well as a number of support vehicles, snow removal equipment, and the like. Ridership last year was the highest in 28 years. In the first 3 months of this year, probably a lot to do with the gas prices. We're up 6% from that. I think one of the biggest challenge we're going to have, given the budget issues, is going to be demand for our service. When gas hit $4 a gallon a few years ago, we saw huge numbers of people coming, and we actually start to experience capacity issues at certain times of the day. So those will be the challenges that we're facing in the next couple of years. Be happy to answer any questions.
Keith, on the budget topic, if there are going to be cutbacks, do you have any sense of what those might look like and where they may occur?
Well, like we're going to try to provide basic transportation for the people that really need it. Now, whether that we haven't made any decisions, but we have service 7 days a week. Certainly, Saturdays and Sundays are less used, but you find in the people who are using transit aren't necessarily your 8 to 5 Monday through Friday folks. So they are the people that are using transit, and there's a good number of them for jobs. They will be impacted if you look at, say, eliminating weekend service or night service. Of course, is less riders at night. The other thing we could look at is frequency during the day. Monday through Friday, we have service every 30 minutes. So those will be some of the things that we'll be looking at, but we haven't made any decision.
Okay. Jeff Schrader.
Thank you, and we're glad to have you over in French Island. As I drive around La Crosse, the area, French Island, one of the things that really stand out, a lot of these people, they want to ride the bus, and there's no place for them to wait where they can, you know, whether it's raining, snowing, whatever it's doing. There's not even a bench. Is there any kind of a program that you have going to rectify that?
Well, we have 490 bus stops, and we do have 50 shelters and a couple benches. So we do have a number of shelters, and we're getting some more shelters through the ARRA funding that we have. So it's difficult to, as I said, there's 490 bus stops. We try to put shelters or a bench on our busiest stops. So.
Okay, is there anything in place where people can say pay to put one up? Do you allow that?
Sure. We have actually done that. Western Wisconsin Technical College put up the shelters that are on 7th Street. Gunnarsson Lutheran has put up shelters on their campuses. I can't say that I've had private individuals donate or pay for shelters, but I would imagine we could.
And if they would you, what kind of restrictions would be on that? Do you have guidelines that you have to meet, or would it be up to the municipality where it's going in? Who do you talk to on that?
Well, you could start with me. Okay. I would have to research that. Now that I think about it, the Clearys actually put in the shelter up on by the Days Inn. They paid for that, so that there is a history of that.
Thank you.
Leon Paff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to the budget, was it a 10% off of the 26%, dropping it to 16%, or is it 10% of the total budget? Because that's a lot of difference between $140,000 right. Or a $560,000 cut in the state. Which is it?
It would be 10% of the state money we get, so 10% of $1.4 million.
Okay, so they're not dropping it. They're really dropping it 2.6% off the 26%, not 10 percentage points. Okay, yes. Thank you.
Bev Mack.
Keith, I think you should tell them about the award that the Transit Center got, and also about the interesting hybrid bus that we have.
Sure. The Transit Center has actually won two awards so far. One a concrete award, and then just recently a public
American Public Works Association is the one I was talking about.
Yes, the American Public Works Association, statewide, it won an award, and it's been entered in a national award. So it's been in a number of transit publications and really getting some notice because it's really unique and working very well.
You can tell them about the other award too. Might as well toot your horn.
The other award, I'm not sure. I know.
Well, you said you had two awards.
It's a concrete award,
okay.
and public works.
Okay.
The hybrid bus is a medium duty bus. We're using it on French Island, La Crescent, and on Alaska, getting. I didn't bring the statistics on that, but it's double the fuel economy of our existing buses. It is a diesel electric hybrid, and works very well in those conditions, saving fuel.
Mm-hmm. Right, I do have a lot of people on the list. Next is Dan Ferries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Keith, and on Alaska, is also happy that you're up there. My question, and I don't want it's might sound like it's coming off negative, but it's not. 93 apartments, 80% rented, maybe 75% of them are rented, thereabouts. Yeah. How many of those are like full rent? How many are subsidized? Do you have a breakdown?
I don't. You know, Gorman is the developer on the project. They own and manage the apartments. They lease the parking and the commercial space from us.
I served on a number of committees that worked on that initially as they were talking about it. I believe it's 90% are subsidized, which is part of the financing. Low-income housing tax credits was part of the largest portion of the financing of the housing portion. So you're tied into rent-subsidized units because of the way that you fund the equity that actually invested in that. That's actually how you fund that is through the tax credits that go to investors that put money into it to actually pay for that.
So it's income-based?
It's income-based for the 15 years, and Gorman has to manage that on behalf of the federal government to make sure that everybody that lives in those units qualifies based on that income standard. And then the roughly 10% of the units are market-based, and anyone, regardless of income, can rent those.
Okay. And my second question was pertaining to the storefronts down below on street level. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of activity or interest going on. We can probably blame that on the economy and things like that.
I can tell you, Gorman, as I mentioned, we have a master lease with them. I am not in the rental business. We have a lease with them. They are struggling. They have indicated it's the lack of parking due to the construction of the parking ramp, the LHI and the parking ramp there. They are indicating that they hope to have better luck and this July, I guess that's due to open, so we'll see.
All right, thank you, Keith.
Yeah. Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, do you ever see a time when it'll be self-sustaining, the MTU will be self-sustaining?
Not in a community the size of La Crosse, I don't.
Even 50%? You said what your revenues now are 29?
Yeah.
Do you see that in the next 10 or 15 years, or?
Well, I think if we lose federal funding, I'm not sure we'll even have transit service. But if you start to cut a lot of these funding sources that we have, we'd be forced to increase fares to make up for that.
And normally, an increase in fare will result in a decrease in ridership. I assume supply and demand still.
It usually does, depending on the situation, fuel prices and things like that. It's probably less sensitive. Ridership would be less sensitive to fare increases. But there's a good portion of the people that ride transit are pretty low income. So
basically, this is going to be a subsidized thing for as far as you can see. Yep. Thank you, sir.
John Menninger.
Keith, I think hopefully most of us know that MTU provides an absolutely essential public service to a vulnerable and frail population of poor and disabled folks and all kinds of other people who choose to ride the bus. I remember one time that we had, when I was around in the mayor's office, that we asked you to get 15% of the revenue from the fare box, and you're at 29%. So you've done a terrific job in that area, and you're heading in the right direction. I know you're doing all you can. I guess I was a little concerned when you made your comments about you're preparing for these cuts. And I hope, you know, because you do provide, you know, the governor's budget is not just an attack on collective bargaining, but it's an attack on the poor. And I do hope that you're not going to roll over and play dead for this, that you and the union, the mayor, is the, I don't know if the mayor is engaged on this, the city council is going to fight these things, not just roll over and accept it.
Yes, I hope so too.
That's what I thought you were going to say. So far, you haven't seen it. Well, I know the union is fighting for
they,
it.
They are, and we are as our transit association on a statewide basis, and there are advocates that are getting together, and we do meet monthly, and we are trying to fight what's happening.
Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you. My questions have been answered. I pass.
Jill Billings.
Thank you. I'd like to reiterate the point that there are apartments in this transit center that are not based on income. So if I worked at Logistics Health Incorporated, I could live at that transit center, walk a couple blocks to work. We don't know if any of those are open right now, right? We don't know. Okay. Because there was confusion about that in a meeting I was at recently. Someone said it's that they had heard from the mayor that it was only subsidized. So I want to make that clear, that there are apartments available for people who are not low income. And I think that system's good, system. And I wondered, regarding the budget, if you could give a little more detail. I didn't quite follow when you talked about equalized value and that your contracts are settled, but others' contracts aren't settled. So that hurts you?
It does. By state statute, the DOT distributes all the federal and state money to each system. We're placed into tiers. Cities, there's like 13 of us in the state, about the size of La Crosse, the Janesvilles, Eau Claire's, the Appletons, are put in a tier. The state gets all the federal and state dollars and gives us all an equal share of that, based on our expenses. So if there's a couple of systems in our tier that don't have labor agreements and don't get federal money, that will lower that federal pot for all of us to share.
And is that regulation set up by the feds or by the state?
State, it's a state statute.
So they're killing us both ways.
Yeah. Audrey Kiter.
Thank you. Keith, I've heard you give this explanation before, but only the other day somebody else said to me, well, when I see there's just one or two people riding on the bus, do we need it? So what's the response we need?
Well, I've been doing this for almost 30 years now, and I continue to hear that, although I hear that a lot less anymore. My answer to that is I would ask that person when the last time they were actually on a bus, because every time I would challenge anybody to go ride any bus anytime, and you'll be amazed at how many people are on these buses. We average over 21 riders an hour for every hour of service we have out there. So
and
I would challenge
step on
people
and
to
step
go
off.
Ride the bus. Yeah.
Jerry Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just quickly, you've alluded to it, and some of the questioners have also, but who rides the bus? What do you know about the bus riders in La Crosse?
I do know that there's a large percentage of them that are low income. We do surveys for block grant purposes and things like that all the time, and there are a large percentage of them that are low income. About 40% of them are going to work. There's a good portion, I think it's about 25% that are going to school. There's a lot of medical needs, trips. We've been very successful. We have UPass agreements with all three colleges in town, and they have helped support the paying for the system, and they're using the system. So that's who's riding.
And is the, thank you, is the revenue from Western, UWL, other places in the 29% of revenue?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Monica Cruz.
Thank you. A couple of quick questions. First one, to your knowledge, Keith, are there any transit utilities, large or small cities, that are self-sustaining, self-supporting, or aren't they usually subsidized?
They're all subsidized. When cities go over 200,000 in population, they do not get federal operating assistance anymore. So they have to pay for their operations through fares and probably state funding. I know Milwaukee and Madison get state funding as well. But they all get federal capital dollars to buy buses and build facilities and things. Even the biggest systems do.
That's so, what I thought. So yeah. It's really not realistic to ever expect us to be self-sustaining. Yeah. My other question is, I've toured the apartments. They're beautiful. Do you get any revenue from the rental of those? I mean, does MTU receive any kind of a cut?
We don't off the apartments, the city that's generating tax base for the city. The apartments are, we get revenue off the parking. They lease there's just under 100 parking spaces for the tenants. They lease all of those from us, so we get rental income there. And they also, as I said, pay us for the commercial space.
Thank you.
Ralph Geary.
Thank you. The last time you were here, I think you were talking about you were working with Onalaska or Holman to expand the service or something, that they had enough population to, you know, it probably warrant some level of service. What's going on there?
Well, that is primarily a function of the La Crosse Area Planning Committee and Tom Fiella and his group coordinating transportation services. And that was probably, if I remember, we were working with Tom and Jackie on commuter service to West Salem and that. And those ideas, they're in plans. Nobody is doing much with that right now, to just given the funding situations. I'm not seeing a lot of interest there. There is shared ride. There are shared ride programs on Alaska, Holman, West Salem. Public transit is serving Holman and West Salem and Onalaska at this time. So.
Okay, and a few years back, were they talking about a sales tax to support you?
We were, and in fact, that's something I did. There is a there is a bill along with the budget that is aimed at rescinding RTAs, the regional transit authorities that were created last year in Madison and a couple other places. We made a big push last year to try to get that ability to fund transit on a regional basis through whether it's a sales tax or some other means, and that failed. And like I said, there is even a push to rescind the ones that were in it, were allowed.
So that's going nowhere.
That's going.
Okay.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do the school bus routes mirror the city transit routes?
No, the school buses serve students who live further than 2 miles from the school, and I'm not familiar with how they're providing that service. Certainly, we have a lot of students that live within the 2 mile range. Using MTU, or other students that are using it for after school events and athletic events and things like that. But I don't have a lot of knowledge of what the yellow school bus routes are.
So you do have middle and high school students riding during those high traffic.
Yes.
Have we ever asked to see? I mean, when I grew up, there was not a citywide school bus route ever. You just transferred or whatever to get to school.
And it was, I mean, the school buses were basically for rural, not for in-city. Could the school bus that goes on Cass Street and ends up at Logan High School be, could those kids be accommodated in the way our system is set up? I mean, do you have a stop at Logan? You do, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did bring rider guides if anybody wants them, but I didn't.
And I have looked at those route maps. So.
Certainly, we serve both high schools, all the schools we serve. I think that's just the school administers that they contract for school busing.
Could we?
We could, I guess.
Do that, bid that contract part too. Because I suppose the difference is those students ride free, so to speak, but they're paid for with the school fund.
School dollars, right.
So basically we could have the taxpayer school funds go to the taxpayer, so you pay yourself. Yeah. So okay, well, you know, if that would be something for us to look at, I would like to see that, because it just seems, I just wonder about the pickup spots. They're like one half block away from sure. where the around sure. the corner from the city MTU, and why they couldn't ride that instead. Thanks.
Dan Bina.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to that Regional Transit Authority, you know, our Transportation Coordinating Committee talked about that for the last 4 or 5 years, and I think we voted maybe in favor of it, but the state did not allow that to happen. I thought I read in the governor's proposal that he was allowing regional transit authorities to be developed so that they would fund themselves through their own taxes. But you're just saying the opposite now.
There is a bill.
Which is part of the budget bill?
It's a RTA repeal bill,
okay,
SB 25 or AB 36, calls for the elimination of regional transit authorities. So it's neither it's not the budget or the budget repair bill. It looks like separate.
Okay, bills. Okay. It's just the opposite of what I thought it was. So that's good to know.
And Mac.
I have a sheet that's called Transit is Part of the Fabric of Wisconsin Communities. I just want to read a paragraph. When money is invested in public transit, that investment is used to provide a product that enables spending in retail, healthcare, education, and recreation by the people who use the transit facility. A study commissioned by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation shows that on average, every $1 invested in public transit provides a $3.61 economic return to the state. When Wisconsin invests in public transit, the whole state wins.
Andrea Richmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith, I had a question on the hybrid bus, and I've seen it going around town quite a bit. When you applied for that, did you have more in that request for more of those hybrid buses? I don't know why, but Madison seemed to have gotten quite a few more of those. And I'm hoping that, you know, is there any money left in that reinvestment money that we could, you know, at least get a couple more of those?
This is the only one with ARRA money at the time, and ARRA was 2009, actually. At the time, we didn't have any other bus replacements eligible for the program. We do, the city in last year's capital improvement budget did budget the local share for 3 full-size hybrid buses. We are going to replace our existing fleet as they come up with hybrids. So you will see more hybrids, but this is the only one that we got with ARRA.
So there is no more money left in that?
No, none.
None?
No.
Too bad. Thank you.
All right, Keith, thank you very much. That was very informative. We appreciate you coming over.
Thank you.
Next item, Mr. O'Malley.
Yes, again, what we keep trying to bring you is information that we hope is valuable and useful. Thank you very much, Keith. That was a great report. It's been requested for a couple of months. Next, we have John Parshall, our IT director, is going to talk with you about your and unveil your new county website, county board website. And if you haven't turned in your forms yet, John and Michelle, if you'd like to come forward. John's bringing the talent that actually helped put the website together, so he doesn't take all the credit for it. I don't know how long this is going to take, but you're going to try to actually work with people individually and make sure that we get feedback on as far as the updated training and that type of thing. Did everybody bring the forms that that some of you have already turned them in, some of you haven't? I'll just turn this over to John and let him do this part then. John?
First I'll go over the website and then take any questions, and I'll talk a little bit about upcoming email training and some of the things we're doing with the housekeeping for email. So this is our new board profile page, and again, as Steve introduced, I didn't have anything to do with it. I just get the privilege of showing it to you guys and giving you a demo. Michelle Jensen is over there. She was our lead designer, and we had Bridget Flood and Tina Weirs as part of the sub-team that helped her develop it. So all good stuff goes to them. And I'll just go through this. I'm going to kneel just a little bit so I can. And feel free to ask questions as I go. But this is our main site. And basically what you'll see is the county board supervisors' districts. And what we'll have is the board members in their districts and full maps. So if you kind of look at this, what they redesigned was we've got board member profiles now. We have committee member or committee profiles, and we have maps. That's kind of the upgrade. So what this is replacing is basically this. This is what you used to have, and this is what you will get. And I'll show you the link that will go, that we will activate on Thursday. So you guys will have from tonight till Thursday to give us additional feedback on this. And what we ask you to do is either email Michelle Jensen or call our help desk at 785-9601, and they'll put you in contact with her. And just because we're looking to make sure that the information on this site is accurate and up to date and good with your eyes on it. So please take a look when you get a chance sometime when you're at home or sometime when you're here during those next 4 days, and then we will activate the link on Thursday. And if you want to have the link as I'm talking, just write down this up here, this URL. That's the link you will need to get to this new site. The public cannot get to this yet. Only you guys will get to this by knowing this site. So sorry, okay, Steve will write it on the board as I talk. The county board supervisor and district will be the first link I'm going to go into, and basically what this will show is that nice, wonderful picture of everybody, and this will be the county board supervisors' districts, and we got everybody lined up, and these are all linkable. So, Steve, this is what you need to copy down right up to this point.
Yeah, that's what I was
doing. Yep. It's hard to get him to follow instructions. And what we did was they designed that these pictures are linkable, too, so you can easily get to their profile page through the picture, or you can get it through the link. But here we got this picture here to look at. And basically what we have is their address, the phone number, their email, and then their district map, which I'll go in a little bit, and this will expand.
And you should have my prisoner number on that one, though, it looks like.
Yeah, you beat me to the. We got this off the inmate jail program.
Yeah.
And a short bio, their elected date, and then all the committees that they're on. And I'll show you those in a little bit. But here's, if you click on the district map, you'll get an enlarged view of that. And basically you can, it's just a PDF viewer. You can increase it, decrease it how you want. And this came right from our zoning department. They put these together for us. So they get some credit here too. We'll be able to look at the committees. And then this is all new here. So every committee now has basically a write-up on what the committee is, the meeting information. This will take you back to your normal minutes and agendas that you're used to today. and then the members that are part of that committee. And you can even get back to the profiles by linking back on that. A lot of work went into the navigation, so you can go back and forth down here. You can get back to this site that I was just on there. Everything is pretty self-explanatory. Here, down here, we even have a link to the GIS land records if somebody wants to look up their district in that regard or find out where they are. Again, and it tells you what you need to do that. I'm sure everybody's used this site before. Thanks to you for that. And I'll go back into somebody's profile here. Not sure what I'm missing here. Oh, the here you can see, yeah, you can get the printable list too, the old way. We still have that if you want the printable list. Remember that, how that looks. We'll have the printable list of the committees too. So if you go into the committees, this is the new view that we have for the committees. You can look them up this way too. So you can look the, you can look things up by the board member or by the committee, which I think is really cool. And then they have the printable list for that too, which is the old way you're used to seeing it. So basically what we have is the best of both worlds for the moment. You can view it the new way, or you can still see it the old way. And again, I think you guys get the idea. Then I'm just going back in towards the committee for that. And then he's got these navigations up here, so you can go previous and next. So it's very navigable. You can get almost anywhere you want. Very functional. And give a lot of credit to Michelle for that. She did a really good job. And again, I just urge everybody to take a look at it and give us some feedback before Thursday, because the worst thing could happen is we activate it on Thursday and then there's something that somebody doesn't like or doesn't see as accurate.
John, could you go back to another site that wanted to highlight something that we're trying to add as well? You'll notice that unlike the previous where you get the whole county and all the maps, we're trying to have it zero in on your individual district. And one of the goals is after you're done redistricting is we're going to try to have that useful. So Joe Dokes, Smith, that lives somewhere, wants to know which district he is in. He should be able to go on here and be able to have that information. So once you end up doing this, because we're going to end up having to have basically two sites happen, right? Your existing board with the existing districts until we have the election at the same time that people are going to be in new districts. So that's one of the enhancements. We wanted to make sure that people could look up who their supervisor was or what their district is. And so that's another piece that we wanted to get this out now so that when you get to the end of the year, we've already said all of that, that it'll be very interactive for citizens as well.
And there is a full district map here too, so you can see all the districts together on that. So just another PDF. And again, the same holds true with the increase and decreasing, again, from the zoning department. So is there any questions, or Michelle, is there something key that I missed?
Andrea Richmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks, Mr. Parshall, for putting that together. Click on, say, one of the committees, and I saw a generic picture, just one of the committees, executive, whatever. Doesn't matter. And are you planning on putting the actual committee meeting picture on there? I think that's important.
Right here?
Right.
Well, I don't know, actually, if the sub-team was thinking about that or not.
I think it's important.
Yeah, I don't think there are those at this point.
I mean, I think it'd be a good suggestion. You know, you don't need the whole committee on there, but at least some of the members. Or
isn't that the Frontline Preservation Committee right there?
Yeah.
I don't
think so. That's me on the end of the
day. All right, Dan Ferries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along with Joe Citizen pulling this up and finding out what district he's in, does it give him a polling place?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yep.
Thank you.
Right here. I kind of missed that when we were talking about, say, your location or your polling place, which I think was a very good enhancement they made.
Yeah, thank you.
Good idea. Arlene Benrud.
Thank you. At the beginning where you have the pictures and then the next one you have all the supervisors, okay. You spelled my name wrong.
We'll fix that. This was a test.
Okay, thank you.
Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. Do you have an email address on there to respond? You said you could get a, is that on the site?
Yeah, we'll write it down on the board again. We'll actually have you email directly to Michelle Jensen, and then or call the help desk at the 785-9601 number. And then you can contact her directly or...
No, I'm talking about your email where we can respond to.
Yeah, people want to suggest some changes between now and Thursday.
Yeah, this
but
is
Michelle's going to write that right
yep,
now.
She's going to write that down, yes. And we'll take it either way. She will be watching your email all week, but if you want to call and you're more comfortable with that, the help desk will route you to her when she's available because she's in and out of meetings all day. So.
Any other questions or comments? Margaret Wood.
Thank you. Along with the meeting agendas and minutes, are they there for us for during the meeting, or are they there for the public, or both? Because if they're also for us, you know, like for tonight's meeting, the monthly report has got some interesting information in terms of population and that kind of stuff. But I don't see where we can get to that from the county view. Is that not meant to be on the county view?
You're talking about the actual recordings?
Are you talking about the things that go in your packet? Or the attachments to the agenda, or what?
Well, yeah. In the monthly report, where half the people...
Steve O'Malley's report?
Yeah, Steve O'Malley's report. But part... Yeah, but all, following that this month were the redistricting and the looking at the population and all that. That was after Steve's report. So is there a way to get to the things that are emailed to us through this county site that would be part of tonight's agenda packet?
I don't think that was ever discussed. And
that's two different things. The monthly report, I thought we had on the website.
That's what's emailed to you, for those of you that have email.
Right.
But that's different from the committee minutes, which are in your agenda packets.
Right.
Two different things. All the minutes are out there on the website as soon as they're posted to your agendas. The monthly reports, I'll keep looking. I thought we had been putting these out here for all of you to access.
Okay, so then
including,
what about those
including the public?
Agenda? Well, I mean, we could talk about this later, but there are some things on my email that I would like to access tonight for later on, and I just want to see if they're going to come up on our new website. Because some of us do pull up the agenda for the meeting. During the meeting.
Are you talking like department head reports, or what are you...
Well, I don't... Okay. You know, I don't know if this was a committee report. It was from the committee on the redistricting, but since I don't think they are a standing committee, that information was just followed on Steve's monthly report from the departments.
Okay, two things. First of all, we'll get a link on this website, but the county administrator's report, which is half departments each month, that's under departments, La Crosse County Administrator, and there's a tab that gets you all the history of those. And so if you've got people that want those or you want to access those, we'll do some kind of a link when we have time. Michelle, is that right? If we could have that link back to here. So if you're at the county board website, you want to see the county administrator reports, there will be a link to that.
Thank you.
Now, the minutes, I believe you've got the redistricting committee is already on there as one of your ad hoc committees, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the last item under ad hoc committees right now. All the agendas and minutes are there, and that's all available to the public right now.
Okay, I've never gone to the to their minutes from this position, so I see.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Maureen Friedland.
Yeah, I've always had a lot of problems typing in that long address. How come Michelle gets to get Michelle Jensen at La Crosse?
That's her email compared to the other as a website address.
Yeah. Actually, in a little bit, I'll go over that. That's going to be one thing we're going to change in the email cleanup. That is a good point. We're going to give everybody that short email address.
Great.
Other questions or comments? All right. Thank you, John, and thank you very much, Michelle, for all your work.
The last part of this is to talk about supervisors' use of emails and those types of things. So, John, what did you want to accomplish with this? Was that the individual training sessions so you can work with each individual? Yep. Do you want to describe what you're going to do for them as far as how they're doing that?
When we go live with the site, and Jenny, could you click on that on the other tab right next to the mouse? Yep. And then back up one. Hit the back button. Yeah, when we put that link, when you go down to county board and committees, it's like the fourth link down, Jenny. That's the one that we will replace with the new one you just seen tonight. And then we'll put a what's new to the right over there that will say, hey, what's new, new county board profile committees and profile pages, just so you see that when we go live on Thursday. But for the email stuff, yes, one thing we're going to do is anybody that wants to use county email from the survey stuff that we took, and then we do have, Steve mentioned, a few that didn't respond left yet. Jenny put the sheets on your desk, so we could get those responses. That's really helpful. One of the things we did learn from those responses was the long email address, so we're going to shorten that for everybody. And basically, everybody will have that same format. So that's the kind of good feedback we get from them forms. But, yeah, I'll be back on Tuesday, April 19th for the first training in this room at 5. And then back on May 19th on Monday at 5, and back on May 9th also at 5. So anybody that signs up for the training will be here to review and go over the email system that we use. We'll go through how to change your password and some cool tips there. And that anybody on those surveys that want to migrate over from a personal email address, we will help you. So I'll have a couple technicians with me. We'll actually do the training. We'll actually physically help you that night and get you up and running if your new member's coming on, or if you just have some problems. Another good feedback we've got from on the surveys is password resets and stuff like that. So I can't tell you to call the help desk and ask for your password, because actually posers are doing that now for security threats. So what I'm going to do is give you your passwords and your stuff that night. If you ever have a password problem on Thursday nights, as you know, I always have an IT person running the projector or running the cameras, and they can help you that night if you ever have any password issues, and I'll tell them to be expecting, you know, comments or concerns, and they can get it reset that night or in the next day after. So just more tips there. So. And those that you want to continue to use personal email, that's fine. We're going to let you do that. We will provide and have handouts of the training if anybody wants it, whether you come or not, and some cheat sheets. And the only thing I want to stress is I said this last time, but it's not going to work out. Anybody not using our email system, not using the new short La Crosse County org, we will not be able to save any of your emails. So you're kind of on your own for archiving and open records. So I had a idea where we could capture some of the personal emails. That's not going to work out like I thought it was. So bottom line, just know if you use personal email, you're kind of on your own for any backups or recovery. If you use our email system, we'll provide that service. So.
John, everybody is going to have the lacrossecounty.org as part of theirs?
Yep, and I'll have that ready for the first night we show up for training, so everybody will be able to start using that. Some of you can actually now. It just depends on how they were set up when you guys were initially set up and if that was requested or not.
Will our old ones transfer or forward to that?
Your old ones will still work, and you can still use them. It'll be transparent, and it'll transfer right back and forth.
Sounds good. Maureen?
The only way that we can get to County View then is going to be through there, right? We can't get the County View through our, you know, our Gmails or our AOLs or whatever.
Yeah, County View, which I didn't show you tonight, is an internal site, but this that I showed you is you can get to this anywhere you have an internet connection.
Okay, so even if we don't choose to routinely use this one, we'll all be assigned an address here, so if we want to go to County View, we can. We can be a little specific about what we want to use that address for.
Yeah,
right?
It's again two issues. One is your email address you're talking about. You'll be able to use that, but the County View, maybe I'm misunderstanding you, is our internal website.
Right.
That can only be used when you're in the building here. But the site you have up now, or I have up on that projector, you can get to that anywhere from any website or any internet connection. And the other thing that's up on the board that we're going to shorten is basically an email address. And you can use that anywhere you have an internet connection to. You don't necessarily have to be in the building to use that email address.
Okay.
Anybody else have any questions? Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. I've been using my city of La Crosse email address at the county. I think that's what I've been using anyway. Should I really split them apart then, or is it okay to continue to use that?
It's okay to continue to use that, and again, I think you just need you to use your same thought process, business only on your city one, and know that then the city of La Crosse is going to be responsible for your archive, your saving your emails, and how their protocols work, and then we won't have all your emails because you're not using our email system. But that's okay if you continue want to use the city. In fact, I think that's one step better than using, you know, a personal email address. So,
now, you said I would not be receiving emails?
No, you'll get them all.
Okay.
It's just that I won't be responsible from this end of trying to save or archive your emails.
I understand
the city would be doing that for you. But everything should still work. You should be able to send to anybody you have in your contacts, you know, that's on the county board or anybody else for that matter.
Thank you.
So. Any other questions? All right, seeing none, again, John and Michelle, thank you very much. All right.
Okay, the next item I listed was, again, with all the activity last week, I thought it would be good to hear an update from our county clerk on special elections, recall, and possible recount. There are a number of things that are going to end up coming to your executive committee over the next couple of months, probably dealing with some budgetary issues that may be 2 months away because obviously we didn't budget for the number of elections that will be going on. But I thought just as we were talking just before the meeting that folks might be interested in some of this information on what's coming up here in La Crosse County specifically. So, Ginny.
So there's been a lot of activity going on in the county clerk's office and a lot of future activity going to happen that we didn't plan for or budget for. And I just wanted to touch base with you so you're up to speed on everything that's going on. As you may have heard, this last election we had in April had a record turnout of 40.25%, which is unheard of. We kind of prepared for it, so we ordered extra ballots. Some municipalities were able to warn me ahead of time, so we were able to print more ballots for them. There still were a couple that ran out and ended up counting paper ballots. But it's great to see that many people actually get out to vote. Coming up, we'll have a special election on May 3rd. That's the result of the primary that happened on April. We'll have the potential recount. With the recount, we're at the point right now, we're not sure if it'll happen. At one point, it was almost guaranteed. Now we're to the point where would it be free or would she pay for it or... You know, would certain municipalities or certain counties be affected by the recount? Obviously, there might be one county who will be significantly affected by that. There's the recall election for Senator Kopanky, which will happen. I've been on the phone with the GAB today to try to get some more information for you so you can be aware of what's happening. May 1st would be the 30 days that GB would have to certify the petitions, the signatures. They were in court on Friday, and they're in court this week trying to get everyone on the same side, along with the judge, to hopefully get an extension so all the recalls in the state would happen on the same date versus scattered around. If that happens, the extension would go through the end of May. We're looking at a mid-July election. If a primary is required, we're then looking at a primary mid-July and the actual election mid-August. For some reason that doesn't happen, the election would be held in mid-June or mid-July if a primary is necessary. The kicker to all of this is if Jennifer Schilling should happen to win that election, that would have an opening in the 95th Assembly District, which again would potentially give us another election and potentially a primary. It's up to the governor to call that special election. It needs to be called. It's just a matter of when he would call it. So several elections could happen. A lot of it's just a hurry up, wait and see to see what happens. We know the May election's going to happen. We know a recall election's going to happen. It's just a matter of when it will happen. Some of the issues with that, like Steve mentioned, is budgets. Linda didn't look into her crystal ball and see all these elections when she budgeted last June, and she budgeted for two small elections. So one of the things we're required to do is after an election for a primary is to hold our RAMPAC, which is our electronic recording device, for 14 days before we can do anything with it. And all other elections is 21 days. Because of this quick a turnaround, we had to go out and rent more RAMPACs from ESNS because we have to hold those for that time period. We're ready today to start burning for this next election, and we're 7 days away from the past election. So that's an additional cost. If this recount happens, we're looking at a week to 2 weeks of paying a canvas board, how many hours a day plus mileage, to recount 30,000 ballots. I guess we haven't got to the point of how we'd pay them or how we determine the pay, but there's going to be that effect. The special election in May, we're expecting a high turnout, maybe not as high as what happened in April, but we have to plan for it, so we have the cost of all those ballots. The recall election, I expect a high turnout, probably similar to what we had in April. So again, we have the cost of all those ballots. If a primary happens, you know, double that cost. We also have the publications. Every election needs a Type A publication, which averages about $60. You also need a Type B publication, which basically explains all the rules in the polling place, how you're going to vote, what will be on the ballot. A Type D, which is your municipal polling places, and a sample ballot. That averages $400 to $500. And again, you're going to need one for each election. If a primary, you're going to need one for the primary, for the regular election. There's a lot of election day paperwork that's going to come with this. If the voter ID bill passes, there's going to be a lot of additional provisional ballot paperwork that's going to be included. We didn't take into account the canvas board. They are paid $30 for the smaller elections to canvass the results, $50 for the bigger elections. We have a potential one, you know, four more elections this year that we didn't budget for. The one thing that might save us is the coding, because we do coding in-house. I do that. Unfortunately, that takes away a lot of my time for doing other things that's required in my office. We're short staffed right now. Hopefully in the next week, I think on Monday, the new person starts. It's an internal transfer, so at least you'll have an idea of the county and be able to answer phones and help us out there. There's going to be the additional cost of absentee envelopes. Overtime for my staff, me and Steve talked about that this morning. That might be covered by the fact that we went a month and a half without the county clerk salary. We've gone the past 2 months short a person in our office, so we're hoping that's going to kind of cover that OT cost. And as far as the April and February elections, we're probably going to look at about a $12,000 revenue of coming back in, of sharing the cost of publications and the ballots with the municipalities and the school districts. So, if you know, that's kind of a summary of what may or may not happen.
Jenny, can you add those together? How much, for example, would you expect would be the total cost of the special election in the 94th, and what might be the total cost of a recall election for the 32nd?
The total cost, and this isn't going to include, it will include the municipality fees, the recall election is potentially $52,000. On here, it was only justified about $3,800 for ballots. The April election, we easily spent $7,700 on ballots. So that's going to almost double that figure. A lot of the other figures look similar, close to it. So we're looking at, you know, $55,000. That includes the municipality fees of paying their poll workers.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Ginny? Terry Johnson?
That was for the recall. Did you give the answer for the 94th?
For the 94th, it's basically taking away the city of La Crosse's poll working fee. So you're down to about $19,000. They budgeted for $1,200 in ballots. I just placed the order for the ballots, and we're looking at closer to $3,500 in ballots for the May election.
Thank you.
So, you know, right about $19,000.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
Since I have the mic. Is there a mechanism for organizations or citizens who might be so inclined to contribute towards those costs in some way? Or is it the burden of the county?
I think we have the ability to accept donations, right, Bill?
We've accepted donations. I think you had several resolutions last month for, you know, small kinds of programs through the health department. It's up to the board whether or not they're going to accept donations. So a proposal would have to be made. It'll have to be put into a resolution. You may or may not want to accept them. It would be up to this board.
Ms. Johnson, if you'd like to underwrite these elections, we'd be happy to accept that.
No, I'm not offering that. I'm curious if an organization, for example, and I'm not speaking on their behalf, but if the League of Women Voters or some other organization, you know, came to understand the cost of these special circumstances, if they would be interested in, you know, soliciting from their membership, for example, to help offset some of these additional costs, what the procedure would be for folks to do that?
Yeah, we would run a resolution through executive committee and then the full board. Now, obviously, if it was an organization that had a stake in the outcome, that would be highly controversial.
Right. Right. That's why I mentioned the League of Women.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks.
John Menninger.
My good friend, Tara. If there's one, you know, the government should do a lot of things, but if there's one thing government should pay for, it is elections. You should never, ever even consider in a million years taking outside money to pay for an election. That is a really not a good idea.
Maureen Friedland.
I want to thank Jenny first for her work in getting us through to this point. I think that tonight she's proven the point that this job, even though it's a politically, you know, you do have to declare a political party, it's not for the faint-hearted, the easily bored, or the technically challenged, which would mean not me, definitely. But I want to ask, when the ballots ran out and paper ballots were coming, were there any people who were delayed in voting? To anybody who went away because they weren't able to vote promptly when they expected to?
No. The town of Shelby knew ahead of time that they were going to run out. They were just busy all day long, so it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon when she requested the more ballots, so she had them in plenty of time. City of Onalaska was questionable if they would run out, so she called us up. We had more ready for her. The town of Madary ran out. They knew they would run out, but it was at 5:30 when our printing department was closed. So they had a PDF. They already had the paper copies going. Town of Greenfield thought they would run out. They sent someone down to us, reprinted off paper copies for them about 5:30, 6 o'clock. And the town of Farmington ran out, and it was 29 ballots. They had the paper copies ready to go. So there was no one waiting while we ran to a copy machine and get the ballots. You know when you're going to run out. You know when you're going to be close. We prepare for that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thanks, Ginny. Well-run elections. Very proud of the job that we do here at the county.
Yeah, Ginny and her staff did just a great job throughout the very trying time, and I just wanted to make sure that you're up to date on it, and she'll bring detailed motions to executive committee and obviously report back to the county board to keep you up to date on that, because a lot of the costs, of course, are municipal, and we need to notify those folks as well. Next item I have is completion of the Law Enforcement Center addition. You can bet that if we weren't on budget, this would have been headline news, and I'm sure we won't get a lot of attention on this, but I think it's important to recognize the teamwork of the county board and staff working together to live within the budget and the dollar amounts that are here. There are a couple of people I want to recognize. I know Jim Spropoulos is here. Mary Powell is not, but two individuals that really spent the lion's share of time on marshaling all the resources to manage what the cost, to report back to us, and to stay within the line items that are here, as well as our finance department on managing bond costs to actually come up with the total amount of dollar savings that are here. We also summarized for you all the resolutions. You'll notice that one resolution that's not here is back in 2007. This board unanimously approved a Law Enforcement Center addition project for $29.5 million. Over a period of time, then, in evaluating the detailed design and expectations, you ended up approving a list of resolutions that took that project to just over $30 million, including heat reclaim, solar hot water, the original bids. The largest one, obviously, was adding a build-out that was not anticipated of probation and parole based on that we finally got their agreement to rent from us. So you see all those individual items that you adopted. And then the anticipated savings once the entire project closes out and all the details are complete at the end of the budget year, we will have saved just over $600,000 versus what the actual project was approved at. So we will stay at just a hair over $29.5 million, which means that with all the funding that you authorized in the upper right-hand corner there, with the state trust fund loans, the GO bonds, interest earnings, and the additional to pay for the additional cameras into the existing jail for video visitation, we'll have just over $300,000 that will stay in debt service that will help us in the plan to level off debt service for the next 3 years. This is one piece that I'll come back to in the 2012 budget and show you that while the debt payments are actually supposed to go up and require the debt levy to go up, we'll use debt reserves and other savings to level that off for the next 3 years. And that'll be part of our discussion in our 2012 budget. So obviously Jim is here, and I also want to talk about the dedication ceremony. But are there any questions on this? Law Enforcement Center Construction Committee spent some time going over this, but I thought it was important, even though we haven't finished every single detail. Obviously, the building has been occupied and has been moved into, as you know. But I thought it was important to recognize that we brought together, the board and staff brought this in under budget and on time. So I think that's really a success to our sheriff, to our finance department, to facilities, and everyone involved.
Ralph Geary.
What was our contingency? I can't remember. Was it a percentage? Was it?
I don't have that memorized off the top of my head. But
I think Jim knows it, and he's coming in.
It was just over $1 million.
Okay. So out of the contingency that isn't designated for anything when we start a project, we spent, what, $400,000 or $700,000?
No, we spent just over $1 million in contingency.
Oh, we did spend the contingency.
Yep.
Oh, okay. We spent the whole thing.
Savings are listed in where the savings were made up in bond issue, solar hot water grant, sales tax savings, focus on energy, rebate.
Any other questions or comments? Maureen Friedland.
Yes. The chair of this committee was Vicki Burke, and she's unable to be here tonight. So she called me and she asked me to send her regrets for not being here tonight. Also to thank the members of the construction committee for their service, to comment on the outstanding performance of the committee, and to note how much work was put into it. There were many difficult decisions in the 4 or 5 years that this took, and we didn't always see eye to eye. On my own, I'd like to recognize Supervisor Burke for her excellent and dedicated leadership of the committee as well. The members of the committee are up there. I just want to say their names, and I have a particular reason for doing so. Jim Burns, Ray Ebert, Ann Fisher, Sharon Hampson, Terry Hansen, Bev Mock, Joe Veenstra, and John Mattinger, and also Tom Rauch. And I want to pause for a moment on Tom Rauch as he continues to struggle with cancer and to find peace in his illness. Tom was our board expert on the practicalities of sustainability, and no one on the board understood the intricacies of building green like Tom did. Tonight, he's in the ultra-efficient and ultra-future home that he built as his retirement home in Amherst Junction in central Wisconsin, surrounded by his dear wife and two daughters, and cared for lovingly by hospice. He and his family continue to welcome your email and most of all your prayers. Tom is a mentor and a friend to many of us, and his contribution to our county's success is lasting.
Thank you on that, Maureen. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, let's go on to the next item.
On the display, if you'd take a look when you leave tonight, or at least give us some feedback, we'll have it up Tuesday night as well, is a mock-up of the recognition plaque that will go in the lobby next to the other plaque that was for the original dedication. We've asked people to make sure to verify how you'd like your name spelled. Obviously, board members are on there. Staff is not. Architects, construction manager, we want to make sure that we get this right. The idea is to put this up at the May 4th event at 4:30. It's a Thursday evening. It was determined that would be the best time. Staff will work on a short program. It won't be very elaborate. We'll invite all the appropriate people that were mentioned in the LEC committee minutes if you've got suggestions of who should be invited, but obviously board members, staff, to be able to have that. So please take some time and give us some feedback. We'll talk about it more and actually get a notice out because we have to do a public notice for that. So any other feedback on that item?
Okay. Seeing none.
Very brief update on state budget. Obviously, this month you have quite a few resolutions related to the budget going through legislative committee and other committees, over 12 resolutions. Just to keep you up to date, obviously Act 10 continues to be held up in court. It's still unclear when it will become effective. Likely 2 more months is probably the earliest that will happen. So as we've tried to identify what kinds of savings there would be or not, we've tried to make estimates based on when that would have been effective. Most of the counties in the state have settled in some way, shape, or form for 2011 or more years. Because of the uncertainty of what happens when there's not a collective bargaining agreement, we are not unusual. Most counties have either instituted and agreed with their bargaining units for the concessions on health insurance if they're under the state plan, or WRS if on those kinds of issues, but it's all over the map. Some were effective immediately in 2011. Some are effective in 12 or 13. We'll keep reporting to you on that once we see what the actual effective date is. Obviously, the other item is that the Joint Committee on Finance hearing that was supposed to be in Western Wisconsin is going to be not in Arcadia. It's going to be in Neenah. You probably have heard about that. I joke that Neenah is at least on the west side of Lake Winnebago, and that usually gets a better laugh, but that's... In the future,
we'll have one of those applause lights go on, so that we know when to respond, Steve.
There will be a hearing at UWL sponsored by Democrats on the Joint Finance Committee, and they've invited other folks. That's Monday, April 25th at UWL from 1 to 7 in the Cartwright's, or I put that in the monthly report. Wisconsin Counties Association, if you haven't noticed, has identified in their latest edition of the Wisconsin Counties magazine, their top six issues are quite similar to ours, even though we have 12 resolutions that are dealing with the budget. Family care, the privatization of income maintenance, juvenile justice issues like the youth AIDS cut, child support, the cut in transportation funding, and the recycling mandate. We have resolutions that are coming through our committee cycle that will be on your board agenda that address each of those. Assuming that they pass each one of the committees, you'll be debating those next week. I think that's everything that I had on the budget.
Questions for Steve on the budget? Ralph Geary.
Well, you said other counties settled around the state. I don't. What were they settling for?
Some were, like ours, settling for a raise. Some were 0%. We don't have a comprehensive survey, but I had Bob check with other comparable counties. We can do more comprehensive reporting back as that gets clear.
Well, WCA or somebody might track it if we can get it from. Maybe we should ask them to, when it gets done, or if it's done, maybe they can send it to us.
Sure. We can follow up at a future meeting. The last item that I have, other than that, is that we've talked over time about, especially the last 4 years since the recession, and I used some bar graphs to show you the impact with new construction on and the estimated tax impact on residential properties in La Crosse County. Is about 1.5%, and so I asked Finance Department to actually put together, as we've done over a number of years, showing you 1 year to the next, but we thought it was important to actually show you that not just based on our estimate of the 1.5%, but using your actual tax bills and fellow county supervisors, you can see that the average change over the 4 years, unless you built an addition or built a new home or had a significant reduction in value, even the overall average then has been 1.4%. And I thought it'd be important to have you actually have that information to see that over the last 4 years since the recession, even with building a new law enforcement center and having to raise taxes for paying for debt service, that we've been able to do, I think, a pretty exemplary job. And I thought that was important for you to have that information.
Questions or comments for Steve? Bill Feehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In preparation for tonight's meeting, I noticed the report, and my first thought was, well, why would we look at 4 years instead of looking at 5 or 10 years? So I looked up the county share of my taxes in year five, and I found that they'd gone up 20%. So over a five-year period, the story isn't quite as positive. I think it's good that the rise in taxes has been moderate during the last 4 years, but it doesn't change the fact that taxes rose much more quickly for many years prior, and our property taxes are still very high, especially in the city of La Crosse. I decided to look into the file that I kept on my campaign for county board last year, and I had done a study of 31 properties on Avon Street in my district. I studied our county share of taxes from 1999 to 2008, and why did I choose this period? Because at that time, those were the most current numbers for the past decade. The average increase for this period was 60.3%, so that's an average of a little over 6% per year. The taxes on my home during that period went up 69%. And according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, inflation averaged 2.7% during that period. So our tax burden grew more than double the rate of inflation. The greater concern is the rate of growth in our county spending that seems to be steady at about 5% over many years. How can we grow spending at this level when the county, when the economy and people's incomes aren't growing at that rate? Property tax revenues don't really tell the whole story on taxes and spending. We also need to look at money raised through fees, sales tax, and borrowing. In 2011, we raised fees $900,000, which is the equivalent of a 3% increase in the tax levy. Add back the 1.87% increase in the tax levy, and we're very close to 5% rate of spending. In 2010, increases in wages and benefits totaled about $1.75 million. This is the equivalent of 6% of the tax levy. We also used $1.6 million in ARRA borrowing to keep the levy at 2.87%. It's my view that our county government has grown beyond what our taxpaying citizens can afford. There must be a balance between the cost of our government and people's ability to pay for it. The recent contract extensions illustrate that this balance has been lost. Assuming we give our non-collective bargain employees a 2% raise, as we've agreed to give our union people, the cost is about $1 million. Looking at the $30 million tax levy for 2011, this is the equivalent of a 3.3% tax levy increase. In my view, a 2% increase in wages should impact the tax levy no more than 2%. This argues for a smaller county workforce or lower county wages and benefits. So why do I raise these issues? Is it that I hate county workers? No, it's because the people of the 3rd District told me loud and clear that we need to slow down spending and give them a break on their taxes. In closing, I would ask, will there ever be a time when our taxes go down?
Mr. O'Malley.
Well, you use a lot of numbers that go back prior to even when most of the board members were involved in this. And you keep going back to and picking up two very large years that were prior to most of this board even being here to raise your numbers, and you keep, and I keep correcting you on that, we had nothing to do with that. In addition to
Mr.
that,
Administrator,
can I finish?
That doesn't change. Okay.
I listen to your points, and you can rebut whatever you want to, but you keep taking larger numbers during a better economy, during a higher level of spending by a previous board, and we can go through all the reasons why those 14% were there if people really want to get into ancient history. But the point is that those 2 years completely skew the numbers that you use, and I believe you know that, Mr. Feehan, and that's been part of the frustration in talking with you about this. In addition to that, even over the period of time that as the economy has gotten worse and more difficult, we've done a better and better job because less and less was supported by new construction. Also during that period of time, we've taken bigger and bigger cuts every single year from the governor, from the federal government, and from the state, and we still have the same number of services. There is nothing in anything that the state or federal government have given us to do that they've said, no, you don't have to do it anymore. All 3 decades, of the last 3 decades, the state has taken every single dollar of state surcharges and used it for the state. Every single year, they have not increased youth aids, they have not increased basic community allocation, and yet, as the economy has gotten more difficult, we've done everything we possibly could. We've, in these last 2 years, we've done 0% in operating levy increase. We've said we'll take the challenge that the governor has said and do zero next year on debt as well. We've got a plan to do this and to meet the targets that the governor has set, and we'll do that and preserve the best services that we can. But to come back and keep using numbers that go back to ancient history, to 2000 and 2001, when neither this administrator or this board chair or most of this board was responsible for that budget, is disingenuous at best and doesn't even recognize what we've done to control spending and says it's never good enough. And that's the frustration, and you keep throwing out numbers, which I'd be glad to go over each and any one of them, but you've never verified any of those numbers or quotes that you've done either with our finance staff or with myself, and I've already said anytime you want to meet, anytime to discuss any of these numbers, but I've corrected that a number of times.
Mr. Feehan.
Well, I brought the page that I have with the 31 properties. And if anyone here wants to take the trouble to go into the Registrar of Deeds site and look up the numbers, they'll find that my math is correct. And I will give credit where credit is due. I'm glad that during the last 4 years there's been an improvement. But you haven't answered my question in terms of, is there ever a time when taxes go down? And, you know, what is the long-term rate of growth in our government if it's not 5%? You know, I look up and I see the alternative shows latest percentage increase for the past 10 years, 2.66 versus the 5.19 proposed. Well, if we borrowed $1.6 million from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, that's borrowing. We're still spending the money. I would argue that the real rate of growth in spending is that 5.19%. So the numbers that I have cited are readily available in your presentations, and you can say that the current board wasn't a part of the 14, the back-to-back 14-plus percent increases, but that doesn't change the fact that those increases are still part of the property taxpayers for the people in our county.
Any further questions or comments on Mr. O'Malley's presentation? All right. Anything further, Mr. O'Malley? Okay, that gets us to cards and correspondence over on the board. No meetings during recess. Reminder, our next meeting is not on a Thursday like it usually is. For April, our meeting is Tuesday. So a week from tomorrow is our regular county board meeting. So please note that on your calendar. If you show up a week from Thursday, you will be late for the show. All right? That gets announcements or suggestions for future meetings. Mr. Geary.
Next meeting or the one after, could we get a more detailed presentation of what's going on with Skipper liners? That thing seems to just kind of be dragging along. We don't need it tonight, but when you get some solid details.
Right.
I'm always thinking we're going to wrap this up, you know.
Well, we're very close on that, and we're hopeful that we'll have something to announce soon, but we'll put it as an agenda item for next Tuesday to tell you where we're at as of that date. Yeah, it won't take long, but we are having very good discussions with Mr. Griffith. Anybody have any other items? All right, that gets us to Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a brief comment and then a point to ponder. Briefly, for Chair Doyle, right now you're so busy chairing the county, raising a family, running a business, operating a small farm, teaching at UWL, and running a political campaign. He's probably at this time wondering, did he find a rope or lose one of his alpacas?
I wonder that every day.
Okay. And my point to ponder, friends are like bras, close to your heart and all about support. That a move adjourned.
Moved by Mr. Sobranek, second by Bill Brockmiller. All in favor say aye. Opposed no. Carried unanimously.